pick up the magic zapper and open my book. Tony Blair spoke to the Blackpool Labour Party conference in 1996, and he famously said, "Ask me my three main priorities for government, and I'll tell you. Education, education, education." And I thought, when I was given this subject, help. And then I thought, hang on, you've been a school governor, or you have been, I'm not now, but a school governor for 17 years. I've been a parent and now a grandparent. And in my job in community paediatrics, I was in and out of schools a lot. So I've had some sort of personal experience of schools. But seeing Ruth sitting there, I'm thinking Department of Education, she knows much more about this than I do. So this comes from the website. The Department of Education is responsible for children's services and education. It's wider than just education, including early years, schools, higher and further education policy, apprenticeships and wider skills in England, which is an enormous brief and is more than just schools and universities. Actually, I'm not going to say a lot about schools and universities. I'm going to say a bit more about, I hope, about education. But the vision, so it's quite small, is of the department, is to provide world-class education, training and care for everyone, whatever their background, for two main reasons. One is to make sure that everyone has the chance to reach their potential and live a more fulfilled life. So whether your potential is enormous and you're going to be getting every degree in the book, or whether your potential is actually to do something maybe more physical and maybe more, not even work long term, but be something that will fulfill your potential. But as far as the country goes, the second vision statement is it'll also create a more productive economy so that our country is fit for the future, has both an individual and a societal purpose. We spend about 11% of our annual budget on education. You see that there's pensions and there's, health, to know that one, that make up the rest of the sort of 49%, and everything else goes in the other 51. And currently, our Secretary of State is Gavin Williamson from last year. I've got that right, have I? I hope. And I hope he ought to know what he's about. He's married to a primary school teacher, and he is himself a school governor, so I'm sure there are a lot of people who are saying, "Gavin, alter this, do that." Education. I was looking for a definition of education, and all the ones I found had to do with schools and universities. And I thought, hang on, it's wider than that. So I'm going to take a very wide definition of education and just call it teaching and learning. Because I think anyone who's been a parent or had anything to do with children knows that education does not begin at the age of 4 or 5. It begins the moment a child is born. And modern neuroscience has shown how much brain development occurs within the first 3 years of a child's life, and particularly within the first 12 months. If you look and see how motor skills and how speech development sort of peaks within that first 12 months, and a baby brain triples in size between the ages of birth and age of 3. And has double the neuronal connections that it will ultimately have in adulthood. And having good, nourishing, consistent emotional and physical experiences during these early years is essential to these neuronal pathways forming, and is essential to being able to make use of education in school and beyond. From about the age of 10, there's a process of culling unused connections and the formation of even stronger but fewer connections in the adult brain, which is why early adolescence is another important time for learning. It Did you know that babies, when they're born, can distinguish all the speech sounds of every language that's spoken on Earth? But as they learn, or as they rather, as they hear their own mother tongue, or maybe mother tongues or father tongues spoken in their home, that they progressively lose the ability to distinguish the ones that aren't part of what they're hearing all the time. It's that making stronger connections and other ones not forming and actually being removed. Which is why children brought up to be bi or trilingual from early life have such an advantage over the rest of us who try and grapple with French at the age of 11 or whenever it was I started learning it. And that children deprived of adequate nourishment, care, stimulation and affection will have fewer and less well-developed nerve pathways in the brain, limiting their ability to benefit from later educational opportunities. So I'm so pleased that the Department of Education now covers early years as well as the wide range of other ages. Because education's always started in the family. We start, our children start learning from a very young age. We learn how to feed ourselves. We learn how to speak. We learn how to look after ourselves, clean our teeth, use the toilet. We also learn, learn how to get dressed. And we learn how to listen to one another and to the adults in our lives. We learn how to interact with other children, how to play together. We learn how to share. That's quite a hard lesson for most kids to learn. And we learn how to enjoy books, and that's a very early skill that we learn. And most important of all, I think we learn how to control our emotions, what to do with that frustration that we've all seen in a toddler. Or that anger that maybe we see in a younger child who can't do what his older brother does. And all those difficult emotions, those are learned at home. They're not learned at school. Okay. But parents have always passed on much more than just self-help skills. They've also passed on how we survive as people. It's maybe not so marked now, but it certainly was in earlier days where people had to learn where food came from, how you hunted, how you gathered. They had to learn how to find direction, how to look at the stars, how to work out which was north from the sun or south, I can't remember which way around it goes, what to do with that food when you'd got it so that you can make it into a palatable form. I can't remember what my pictures look like. Oh yes, it's weaving, isn't it? How to find things to clothe you, yourself. And about your culture, because it was different for different people. And how to pass that on to our children. And our moral values, they are learned at home very often. And no matter how hard school might try at the age of 4 or 5 to say it's important we don't steal, if that's not been a value at home, little Johnny finds it very difficult to take that on board. And we also share with our children what faith is to us, what our maybe the culture of our religion, but what prayer is to us, what that looks like, and our scriptures. And every culture does this. We share the stories of the Bible in our culture and many other countries around the world, Christians are sharing with their children, and maybe in a culturally relevant way. For Jewish children, they learned at home, as all children do, but as writing was developed, it was necessary for people who were more expert in and had time to teach to come in and teach groups of children. It was a more efficient way of using time and it was more effective. So by the time of Jesus, schools had been established in most of the habitations, the villages and towns in Israel. In the middle of the AD 60, the high priest, who was called Joshua ben Gamaliel, and he was high priest from 63 to 65 AD, he established that teachers should be appointed for every district and that children should be brought to the appointed teachers at the age of 6 or 7. And there they would learn to read, not so much write, but particularly read the scriptures, of course, in Hebrew. And there is a boy, probably the right-hand picture is more authentic because Jewish people will read with a sort of pointer as they, so they don't actually touch the text. And they would not only read, they would learn, and they would learn by rote, and they would learn to repeat and to learn. So by the age of 10, it was expected that most children would have the Torah, the first 5 books of the Bible, by heart. So, you know, imagine Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, by heart. And it was important because not only did the Jewish nation consider that the Torah was the important scriptures to learn about God, but because they talked about everyday life, talked about what you ate, what you wore, and how you lived as a society together, how you helped one another and supported one another, about hygiene, solving interpersonal problems, and control of disease. They're all there in a sort of culturally relevant way in those first 5 books of the Bible. But about the age of 10, most children would have more or less got to that point, and then they would be learning from, again at home, a trade from their father, maybe if they were a boy, maybe domestic skills for a girl. Although there is evidence that girls were included in the synagogue school and could read and write right from those days. The brighter students, while still learning the trade from their parents, would also continue to learn from a rabbi in the community along with adults. They'd sort of have evening classes. Again, looking at the rest of the scriptures through from Joshua to Malachi. And not just learning and learning by rote, and learning stories, but would actually be grappling with the text. What does it mean? And would learn how to ask questions of their faith and of the meaning, which is always a good thing to do, to ask questions and apply what we learned. And then those who were going on to be rabbis or teachers would then look to follow a well-known rabbi and go and be his disciple for a number of years, live with him. And that's the sort of model that we see with Jesus with his 12 disciples and learn how he did things. It was called taking on the rabbi's yoke, which you might recognize from verses in Matthew about taking my yoke upon you and learn from me. And we seem to have kept that model of sort of initial primary, intermediate secondary, and higher tertiary education through the years. And in England, we now require our young people to stay in education, apprenticeship, or other recognised training until they're 18 years old. There's some sort of discussion about how valuable that is for some children and the quality of the education they're receiving at 16 and 17. We now recognise that there are different sorts of skills and intelligences, and we talk about mathematical intelligence and musical intelligence, which are all part of the sort of great variety of ways in which we have been equipped to learn. We know that some people are visual learners, some people auditory learners, some people like to get hands-on and be kinesthetic learners. And I think one of the pities is that we measure our universities and schools on their academic achievements and on the wage packet achieved by their graduates, rather than the individual fulfilment and societal good that the Department of Education aspires to, but maybe that's harder to measure. When I was in my early weeks at university, I remember going for coffee to the room of a final year science student. I can't remember her name, but I do remember that above her desk, she had this verse pinned up from Psalm 111, verse 2. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. And for her, that was her motivation for studying science, because she could see that everything she studied had to do with her faith. It wasn't separate from her faith. It wasn't that because she studied Monday to Friday or whenever, that was separate from her going to church on Sunday or being part of the Christian Union in the university. And she realized that her studying might then lead to new discoveries that would benefit society. Things like we are only discovering now that nature is in such a delicate balance that we can't meddle with it without enormous consequences. Paul had been mentor to Timothy from the time that, now I don't know that this is going to work, he'd found Timothy as Lystra there. This is Paul's first missionary journey, and he goes and he ends up there in Lystra. And through Paul's ministry, a crippled man is healed, and everyone thinks that he and Barnabas are gods and start worshipping them, and they disabuse them of that, and then they start stoning them. So Paul, Timothy lived in Lystra. He was the son of a Jewish mother and a Greek father. And it could be, one conjectures, that they came to Christ through Paul's ministry and his preaching on that first missionary journey. Paul finished his first missionary journey, and several years later, he did his second missionary journey. Oops, no, I'm going back the wrong way. And he revisited, went this way around this time, but he revisited Lystra. And on that journey, he picked up the now a little bit older Timothy and took him with him. So Paul became a real mentor and a teacher for Timothy. And our second reading is at the end of Paul's life when he's encouraging Timothy to carry on in his Christian discipleship, continuing to study and learn from the scriptures and continuing to teach others as well, to preach the word, to correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction, if you go on a bit further from the reading we had today. So I wonder for us today, I could see three challenges to us in our walk with Jesus Christ. One was, what are we doing in our teaching and our learning with our children, our godchildren, our grandchildren, our nephews and nieces, anyone that we come across, our pupils? What are we teaching and learning? One of the great things that we sometimes, well, I think we often fail to pass on, is our faith. We are running the Parenting for Faith course at the moment, and it's built on the premise that we, in our teaching our children, we're quite good at making God smart children who know about God and about the Bible, but we're not so good at God-connected children who are learning and growing in their own faith. And we are encouraged through the course to actually let our faith show. Let our children see how and when we pray. Let's not be afraid to say, well, actually, I don't understand that from the Bible. I wonder if we could find out together and learn together as a family, and how to encourage our children that they too can talk to God. We don't have to do it all for them, but they can grow too. And are we mentoring others, as Paul did to Timothy? Are we taking new Christians alongside us and saying, well, you know, is there anything you don't understand? Would you like me to just sit down? And I don't have all the answers, but we can have a little look together. Are we mentoring others? And then, what are we doing with our local schools? We have, we're blessed with four schools in our community. Are we? We've got three. Why do I say four? We've got three schools in our community. Oh, that's an invalid statement. Another one, maybe that's prophetic, Ruth. And we are blessed in that we've been able to, as churches together, been able to take the Open the Book into all three schools each week by week. Groups go in and talk about a portion of the Bible and make it live and live for the children. So we could maybe help in school. And volunteers are always welcome. Maybe you could think about becoming a school governor. It's quite an onerous task, but it's a very worthwhile one. And we could encourage the teachers among us We can pray for them. We can discover what the issues are on their minds and their hearts as they do their job. If you want to know how you can be more involved, read the notice sheet. Fran has written a little summary of what's going on this month in our connections with, particularly with St Mary's, because it's more than just open the book. There are other things happening that you could get involved in if you want to, if God leads you that way. But I wonder if our biggest challenge is our own personal learning and teaching, our personal learning particularly, because as those of you who are members of the U3A know, that U3A encourages learning for people of the third age, those who've now retired, who aren't sitting back and just watching the box all day, but are actually still wanting to learn and to be involved. So for all of us, learning and continual learning is important. So are we prioritising that? Are we spending time learning not only of God's wider world, which is important, but integrating that into our faith and how we live our lives? Are we learning more of God in our daily life? Not just through looking at creation, but also through looking at the scriptures, at reading books, at actually seeking to know more of this unfathomable God who loves us with such an incredible, unending love that we can never get to the bottom of knowing all about him. So maybe this morning we can commit ourselves to carry on learning, carry on teaching, and carry on discovering the greatness of God. Amen.